Blog Talk Radio.
All right, it is the Saturday Morning Nerd Show, a brand new podcast from That Nerd Show. I'm your host, Marcus Blake, and with me today is Alex Moore.
Hello, greetings.
And we will have some other guests a little bit later talking about video games. Hopefully, if you have read anything about this very first show of the Saturday Morning Nerd Show, we are announcing our Game of the Year here in about 20 minutes. And we're going to be talking about our top 10 list, our top 10 video games of 2017. But instead of just publishing our article, we decided it was fitting to have our very first Saturday Morning Nerd Show and our Game of the Year announcement. And we're very excited to announce what ended up being the winner at That Nerd Show after kind of a highly contested debate and voting structure. It was very close between two titles, but one eked out just a little bit. And no, we're not going to give that away. You just have to stick with us for the next hour. So anyway, a little bit about the Saturday Morning Nerd Show. Basically, we've missed being able to do a podcast, and we decided what's better than Saturday morning cartoons since we don't really have any? We are. So we are the replacement for Saturday morning cartoons for adults. So get your breakfast cereal, get your cup of coffee, or if you're doing that third shift, grab yourself a beer. And we will be here for you guys at 10 a.m. on Saturday mornings. Probably still in our PJs because that's how we roll. So anyway, but before we get to talking about video games and stuff like that, we need to talk a little bit about nerd news because while, you know, much may not have happened over the past week, you know, it's just end of the year announcements and stuff. But there are some things that did happen. The very first thing, in case you're wondering, yes, Star Wars: The Last Jedi is still number one at the box office. That's much more of a rhetorical news item than anything else. I don't think we expected anything to really beat Star Wars, not even Jumanji. But yeah. We're not saying that Jumanji isn't good. It's a very fun movie, but again, I love The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, but him and Kevin Hart really can't compete with Star Wars, can they? Anyway, it's topped about $934 million, so it's worldwide. It's getting to that billion-dollar mark, and I'm sure it's going to be pretty close to The Force Awakens here in the next month or so. And I find this very interesting, despite all the protest about The Last Jedi, which we'll talk about later, that, you know, people are still going to see it. But then again, we all saw Episode 1 in 1999 multiple times. Anyway, yeah, that is what's going on with that movie. Also, for you Dave Chappelle fans out there, which I think we're all a little bit of a Dave Chappelle fan, it was announced this week that he will have two specials that will drop on Netflix tomorrow, not just one. So he was so successful with his last two that they, you know, gave him another one for Netflix, and they decided to go ahead and give him a second one. So there we go. Also, I think that has a lot to do with the fact that Louis C.K. got dropped from Netflix because of sexual harassment allegations and that really terrible movie called I Love You, Daddy, which just sounds really creepy. Yeah, I know. I'm just going to go ahead and say it, Alex. I think if you make a movie about sexual harassment in Hollywood, you shouldn't title it I Love You, Daddy. It just, yeah. Unless you're going to rerun that scene from The Big Lebowski. Yep, he's a pederast. But that's just my opinion. Okay, other news items that's happening. So I don't know if you heard this, Alex, or not, but yes, apparently Quentin Tarantino is going to direct a Star Trek film. And no, that's not a joke.
Kind of reminds me when I heard that Kevin Smith was going to direct a Superman movie. It's just a head scratcher to me somehow.
Yeah, I don't really know quite what to make of that. They did say it's going to be the first rated R Star Trek movie, and I'm kind of like, well, it sort of has to be. It's Quentin Tarantino. But anyway, there was another announcement that he, to write the screenplay, they got Mark L. Smith, who did The Revenant, which, you know, we all rated very highly as a movie. But so it, yeah, apparently Quentin Tarantino is not going to script the entire thing. They did bring in someone else to do it, so I think that kind of helps a little bit. But there was an interesting debate on social media about whether Quentin Tarantino should do Star Trek, and the I'll put it to you this way. My take on it is I will go into the movie with mild curiosity the same way I would have if Tim Burton had done a Nicolas Cage Superman movie. I'm not saying it's going to be good, but I'm willing to at least watch it a little bit. Anyway, yeah, so that's what's going on with that. Well, at least I've got a good screenwriter to help make this film. And there isn't any word on really... I think they're basically shooting for an August 2019 release date. So we got about a year and a half, and I believe it still. I don't think it's going to be a new story. I think it does have to do with the alternate timeline set up by J.J. Abrams. So that's what we know of it. Quentin Tarantino and Star Trek. Why not? I will say this though. If you don't have Samuel L. Jackson in a Star Trek movie with Quentin Tarantino, then I think you just do everybody a disservice. Doesn't mean it's going to be good, but I think you have to have Samuel L. Jackson in there somehow with his wallet that says bad motherfucker.
I just want to know if he's going to have an eye patch or not.
Well, there you go. All right. Dark. Season 2 was greenlit. It's originally a German production and was pretty successful at Netflix. So they decided to greenlit a season 2. And they kind of have to when you leave the first season on a cliffhanger. So I'm not sure that's actually a huge surprise, but there was an official announcement this week that there was going to be a season 2. All right, another interesting thing. Did you know, I mean, you do know about this Krypton series on the Sci-Fi Channel, right, Alex?
Right.
Yeah, so for those of you that don't know that there's a series about Krypton, it has nothing to do with actual Superman or Kal-El. It's set generations before the planet is destroyed and stuff like that. And it's about the time, it's before, you know, the House of El was ostracized and shamed and at the time it was, but it's his grandfather trying to, you know, redeem the family's honor and among political chaos and stuff like that. So they're basically doing a prequel of his grandfather set on Krypton. I don't know. As a huge Superman fan, I don't know what to make of this. I'm like, again, it's like mild curiosity. But again, I have to ask, is there anything interesting of Krypton before it blew up and before Superman left and, you know, came to Earth? I don't know what you're going to do with the show unless you're just basically making, you know, so like the Tudors or something like that, but on Krypton. That's the only thing I can kind of imagine with this show.
Well, I'm kind of guessing maybe it'll be like some prophetic symbolism that sort of, you know, ties into the character of Kal-El, you know, Clark Kent, Superman, with it being 200 years ahead of time. You know, was there talk or whispers of this person and how he was going to exist or anything like that? Or was it
right.
somebody who was similar to Kal-El at some point that didn't come to fruition the way that he did somehow?
Right. And I think you would almost have to. But anyway, they did announce a release date, which is March 21st of this upcoming year. It was created by David Goyer, who's, you know, been a part of, who wrote Man of Steel, did the Dark Knight trilogy, directed by Christopher Nolan. So, I mean, they've got someone experienced with Superman and DC to come in and do this show. But only time will tell to see if this is actually going to be good. And trust me, we will definitely let you know at that nerd show whether it is or not. Okay, moving right along. I kind of laughed at this title. I just thought it was funny. So there's a new Cleopatra movie coming out. Which, you know, of course, 50 years is okay to kind of reboot it. I mean, the last one was Elizabeth Taylor and stuff. But the title of an article that was released this year was New Cleopatra Movie to be Lean, Mean, and a Political Thriller. And I thought, so it's not much different from the other one or the entire story of Cleopatra. I don't know how you're distinguishing this compared to, you know, Shakespeare and Mark Anthony, and it's all a political drama. That's the whole point. But anyway, yes, there's going to be another one, and this was really, I swear this is not this week's Sign of the Apocalypse, but I just thought it was kind of hilarious, and this was the description that they gave out this week. It's similar to All the Money in the World in that there's a lot of research involved, and there's a question of all that, how do you want to do it, and how do you make something new out of it? I guess Lean, Mean political thrillers where you're going to make it new. Part of the idea was to take two genres, and they felt like, which was the kidnapping genre and, you know, call it a great man genre, the Citizen Kane genre. Anyway, instead of doing a movie as, you know, the prestige picture, the 3-hour, lots of pageantry, people with fans and English accents and all that stuff, we really treat it as a political thriller, dirty, bloody, lots of people swearing and having sex and all of that other stuff, and just treat it as a 2-hour lean, mean political thriller full of assassinations, etc., just going the opposite direction from what we think the movie is going to go. So again, you're basically doing the entire same story as everybody else as Cleopatra. I mean, I think the only way you can make it different is if it was like a sci-fi thriller, Cleopatra in space. So, I don't know. Does that make you excited to see the movie, knowing that it's going to be a lean, mean political thriller? Anyway, so we'll no word on who's being cast or anything like that and stuff, but there we go. I guess it is time to reboot that. Well, I mean, they did remake Ben-Hur again, and it did completely suck compared to the Charlton Heston version. So, okay, more news, more stuff that's happening out there. All right, so Stargate fans, guess what? There is another series, if you haven't heard about this yet, Stargate Origins. So, again, we're keeping up with the tradition of prequels. And basically, what it is, it will explore a brand new chapter of Catherine Langford's early history surrounding the extraordinary portable. Young Catherine embarks on an unexpected adventure to unlock the mystery of what lies beyond the Stargate in order to save Earth from unimaginable darkness. In case some of you don't realize out there, she is the old woman in the movie that finds David Spader's character and gets him to decipher everything on the Stargate so they can have their first adventure. But it's going all the way back to the, you know, when they discovered the original Stargate back in 1929. But anyway, this new series, it will run for 10 episodes. There'll be 10 episodes according to news, and it will premiere online February 15th. So I don't think it's just a small little prequel series to kind of give you some history. According to this, it looks like it's going to be 10 episodes at 10 minutes each. So I think what they're trying to do is, it's the same thing that they did with Battlestar Galactica, Blood and Chrome, where they give you like the first days of Adama when he was a Viper pilot in his first adventure and whatnot, and hoping to spurn, you know, another series out of it, which never really happened. But, you know, it was like a great little hour and a half Battlestar Galactica adventure. So anyway, I guess they're just trying to add some more color to this. But I think it's kind of interesting to have this, you know, as kind of like a little prequel before the, you know, if you wanted to watch it before the original movie, which, you know, will be 24 years old next year or coming up. So anyway, there you go, Stargate fans. You get a little little online series with some teasers and stuff. All right. Since we're all about gaming this season with this show, some interesting news about gaming. Call of Duty World War II and Destiny 2 were the top two games that, you know, outsold everybody. They topped video game sales, and it basically, they sold over, you know, millions of copies. I'm trying to get a final number for you here, but it was announced today that it was also the number one title in the UK, Call of Duty World War II, and right, you know, with Destiny 2 right behind it. So they basically put together, Call of Duty World War II surpassed 1 billion in sales overall, and it was actually the number one selling franchise in North America. Well, the Call of Duty has, you know, it's been the number one selling franchise in North America for like a consecutive nine consecutive years. But anyway, yeah, those are your two highest selling video games of last year. And I can tell you, just to drop a little hint, that neither one of those games are our game of the year. But they might be an honorable mention. You'll just have to wait and find out. All right. Okay. Some more exciting news about gaming, stuff that's going to be free on PlayStation and Xbox Gold, two of the best games that you should check out. Deus Ex: Mankind Divided, which came out last year and really was just very underrated. I mean, it kind of just it came out like early 2016, and then just, I think no one really heard about it. It was a sequel to the first one, as sequels go, which came out a few years ago. Really a fun game, but yeah, it'll be, you can play it free in January on PlayStation Plus and Xbox Live Gold. Also, and you will have Batman: The Telltale Series, which was another interesting series that came out this year. If you're fans of Telltale series, like I said, you'll get to play Batman free coming in January. But that's really your two top games that you should check out. And there's other games like Psycho Pass, Mandatory Happiness, retro puzzle horror game, and then, of course, Uncanny Valley for the PS Vista and PS4 is another one. And another game called Starblood Arena, which I don't really know anything about that. And I think it was developed for the VR stuff. But anyway, there's a bunch of new games coming. that everybody should check out. So there you go. Always for gamers, if you have those Xbox Gold, PlayStation Plus, which we pretty much all do, one or the other, there's always good stuff happening. And Deus Ex, that's the one I really truly recommend. That was a really fun game. And it's definitely got some good replay value. And that is what's going on in the nerd universe. So, speaking of Star Wars, we're going to get to a little bit of a review and talk about some other things. But I wanted to mention a couple of movies, one that is coming out and one that is already out in theaters, and maybe another one. You saw Downsizing, correct?
I actually ended up seeing some other movies instead. It was just a kind of a scheduling issue for me, so some things kind of got switched around, but I have seen some of the other movies that we're scheduled to be speaking of.
So what you're saying is,
still haven't gotten to.
So what you're saying for our viewer, or for our listeners out there, that Downsizing with Matt Damon is so good that you went to go see other movies.
Hectic time of the year.
Yeah,
Downsizing
wasn't high on our radar, and I'm sorry about that. It just wasn't. But anyway, a couple of other things. A couple of other movies. The first one, Molly's Game. It's the first movie written and directed by Aaron Sorkin. And first of all, if you're an Aaron Sorkin fan at all, Newsroom, West Wing, Sports Night, he wrote the screenplay to The Social Network, then you're going to love this movie. Dialogue is witty. It's great, as it would be with Aaron Sorkin. But the movie is about Molly Bloom, who became the poker princess. She ran the most exclusive high-end underground poker game in L.A. and New York for the better part of 10 years until she got busted by the FBI, not necessarily for running the poker game, but she got tied to Russian mobsters, and they tried to indict her under RICO and stuff like that. But her story is very interesting because it involved a lot of famous, you know, Wall Street guys, rich guys, and celebrities out of L.A. who would lose thousands. And she never named names at all as they were trying to indict her. She gave up a few for her book that she wrote that were already public record. But, I mean, people like Ben Affleck and other were, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire, and stuff like that. But it was it's one of the better movies that I have seen this fall and very much enjoyed it. But I think anytime you have Idris Elba in a movie, you always have to take notice. And I also feel the same way with Jessica Chastain. I have never not enjoyed one of her movies at all. So I personally gave this movie an 8 out of 10. It wasn't perfect. There were some moments in it that dragged a little bit, but I thought it was very interesting with her telling the story and most of the movie in flashbacks as she's explaining what happened to her lawyer, you know, before they try her. And him trying to get out why she won't give up names and stuff. So, did you happen to see this movie?
I did actually go and see this movie during the week, and I pretty much agreed with everything you were saying about it. And to kind of reiterate the point, the scene you're referring to between Idris Elba and Jessica Chastain that takes place kind of later in the story, I can't think of too many scenes in movies, maybe this year, where one scene could have gotten two people in the same scene an Oscar nomination in the same scene together, because it seemed to kind of be the best scene for both of them together as they kind of bounced off of each other back and forth.
Right. No. I absolutely agree. I mean, it was great chemistry. You're absolutely right about that. And I think that's kind of the brilliance of Aaron Sorkin and writing great dialogue and stuff. But I mean, you also have to have two caliber, you know, actors to be able to, you know, bring out the performances and stuff. And You know, I just, it was a fun movie. This is one that I would definitely go back and watch again. And anyway, like I said, it's worth going to see, especially as a matinee and everything. Kevin Costner was actually pretty good in it. And, yeah, I mean, I liked him towards the end of the movie. Yeah.
He wasn't a lot of screen time. Yeah, he wasn't given a whole lot of screen time, but with what he had, I thought he made the most of it. And
right.
I think what you're about to say, later in the film, when he kind of becomes a bigger part of the story, it was really one of the better acting moments that I've seen out of him. And
right.
It was a very emotional scene on top of that. So.
Okay. All right, we're going to bring Brendan up here for just a moment. And we got Brendan with us.
Morning, guys.
So apparently Brendan wanted to be the typical kid on a Saturday for the Saturday morning news show and oversleep. And we will give him shit for
birthday
that.
Birthday last night. What can I do?
Excuses. Hey, well, we do want to wish Brendan
the wrong number too, you know. But hey.
Okay. All right. So I'm
no,
partially at fault for that. Yes.
Yeah, mostly me. Mostly.
Okay. But we do want to wish Brendan a happy birthday, as it's his birthday weekend. But anyway, getting back to movie reviews, yeah, Molly Bloom is definitely worth going to see. So for you movie pass people out there that try to see everything, highly recommend it. One movie that we're going to talk about is, and we haven't done the full review on our website yet, but we can mention a little bit. Is The Paper. It will have a full release in January, but this is the one with Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep. Tom Hanks plays Ben Bradley of the Washington Post, and Meryl Streep plays Katherine Graham, who owned it. And it is about the Washington Post and the Pentagon Papers and challenging the courts and the Nixon White House about the right to publish classified information. For you journalists out there, this is a seminal movie that you need to see, because it was this moment that we brought modern journalism out of the darkness, so to speak, in the fact that it was when papers truly held politicians, presidents accountable. And I think every journalist out there has been inspired by, you know, all the president's men. And I think most people tend to forget that The Washington Post made their bones, or really became famous, before they had the Watergate scandal. And it was about the Pentagon Papers. So for all the arguments that we talk about in releasing classified information, Julian Assange and, you know, Snowden and stuff like that. And this isn't, we're not getting into a political debate about this, about what we do. But I do want to point out one thing about the brilliance of this story. The Washington Post didn't name undercover sources. They redacted stuff and printed reports. All they did was report, you know, what politicians at that time had already been saying. And in some of those cables, but they didn't, you know, undercover operatives, and they didn't just name everybody, so to speak. But anyway, this was I did the screening a few weeks ago on this, and it was an incredible movie. Of course, I think when you have Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep in the same movie, you know it's going to be somewhat good. I mean, you're guaranteed to at least get great performances. But everybody was just fantastic in it, and we were talking about this coming out of the movie, or before we went into the movie. Who plays the better Ben Bradley? Jason Robards from the All the President's Men movie, or Tom Hanks? And I honestly have to give it to Tom Hanks. And Brendan's going to love this, because we complain about this movie all the time. You know what Tom Hanks didn't do playing a Boston newspaper man? He didn't have a ridiculous Boston accent, Kevin Costner.
Thank you.
13 Days is a great movie, but Kevin Costner was
Costner sounded like he was Ted Kennedy after a 4-day bender.
No. I know that accent almost brought that movie down. But anyway, the paper, I'm sorry, the Post, I gave it a 9 out of 10 personally, and it is a fantastic movie. And I think everybody should definitely go see it. And by the way, it is directed by Steven Spielberg, and he made no bones about it. It is a political movie. It makes a statement for all sides about how the media should treat things, especially in a 24-hour news cycle. And I feel confident that Steven Spielberg can kind of get away with making those political statements. You know, Schindler's List being a great example, Saving Private Ryan. You know, so anyway, you'll get a wide release on this movie in a little bit. We're not. If you haven't seen our review of The Last Jedi, you need to go see it or go read about it and how we all rated it. We did a staff review. It's on our website, thatnerdshow.com. So we're not going to talk about it again because we did an hour-long special on it. But one thing we will do is we're going to talk about this week's Sign of the Apocalypse, which has to do with the Last Jedi petition that was started by a crazy fan. About why Disney needs to just scrap this movie and completely remake it because it sucked. And I don't know. Do you guys? What do you guys think of this petition?
I want them to step back and realize you just asked Disney to render the last performance of Carrie Fisher's life as non-canonical.
Yeah.
And then I want them to smack themselves in the face. Hard. Because if I punch them, it's assault.
Well,
I think it's just another bad example of people who just are looking for any excuse to get some attention, steal some thunder, and I think the whole thing is ridiculous and really in poor taste, going along with what Brendan said about Carrie Fisher on top of everything else.
Well, and I agree. But one thing I want to point out is I understand that, excuse me, this is a decisive, and you know, a divisive movie. I get it. We all had issues the first time we saw it, and we all had to go back and watch it again to catch other things. I've seen it 3 times, and it's like every other Rian Johnson movie. I have to watch it more than once to really appreciate everything that's going on and all the little nuances. And by the 3rd time I saw it, I was like, I was wrong on my first grade. It is not as bad as I thought. It's not. It is a great movie, okay? And it does flow very well, and there are great – I mean, there's still issues with the movie. And I get people being upset about his take on Luke Skywalker and everything. But there's the difference between fanboy nitpicking because you have your characters on a pedestal and you're wanting a certain thing compared to look at what the story really is. And not that we're going to drop spoilers, but yes, Luke dies. He doesn't need to serve the story anymore except the wise Jedi that passes on what he has learned and then he's done. And he went out with a bang. So if you want to nitpick, that's fine. You want an online petition and just rant and rave, that's fine. That's what the internet's for. But I agree. I mean, if you're sick, and after nearly $1 billion, I don't think Disney's really going to take you that serious. So, remake. Now, if you want to start a petition to remake the prequels, sure. I think we'd all kind of sign on to that. Or at least
just get rid of episode 1, name episode 2 episode 1, and then come up with a new episode 2 in the middle.
Right. That one I wouldn't necessarily mind. Or if you want to take what you have and kind of recut here and there and make just one big prequel movie, like some fans have done.
Like The Fallen Jedi was very, very well done. It had some had some issues with it as well. But if you could professionally go back and do that, that could be great.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of how I look at the prequels now when I watch everything. It serves enough of a story, and you can watch the Clone Wars series in between to really get your full whatever. So, but that's this week's Sign of the Apocalypse. We have to go forward. We are starting to run out of time a little bit, and we have to announce our Game of the Year. Before I do, I just want everybody to – I want to explain how we voted. We have a staff of five that we all play games. We all do a top 10 list. And the numbers of votes that each game gets is based on where we place a game. So at a 10, if we placed a game at the number 2 spot, that means it gets 8 votes because it's 10 minus 2, and that's 8 votes. It's 8 from the bottom. So we calculate all the votes based on where we place games in our top 10 list, and whoever has the most votes ends up, you know, squeaking out and being the number one game of the year. So without further ado, Horizon Zero Dawn is our game of the year. And for some of you that are already cringing and thinking that Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild should be, well, it was very close. It was a lot closer than we've ever had in rating games. But it did have more votes, and we all were very different in what our personal game of the year was. But based on the numbers, Horizon Zero Dawn is the game of the year. So we're going to start with that and explain why it is. And I'm going to start with Alex. Why is Horizon Zero Dawn game of the year to you?
Well, I think this goes back to my original review, and you know, the thing about it to me was the easy gameplay. It was just how you could play the game, stop, and then come back days later or even a week or two later, pick up the game and not have to relearn anything. And in that way, it really did remind me of like a Zelda game, going back to like, say, Ocarina of Time, where the controls are just so well orchestrated that when you pick it up, it's very easy to learn, but it's then also very easy to remember, and you don't have to relearn it. And you can make a game as challenging as you want in terms of when you're actually out playing the game, but you never want a game with the controls to be challenging. If that's going to be the challenge is in the controls, then you're just kind of making something that, you know, it's broken, basically. So I always say that replay value, of course, is a very important thing in gaming, especially nowadays with how much money we spend on games. And I can't say for sure that Horizon would have the best replay value because I haven't gone back and replayed it, per se. But you can get an idea when you play a game, going through it the first time, on just how good the replay value is going to be, either by how enjoyable it is or by things that you maybe didn't catch the first time that you maybe want to try again later. So,
right.
To me, it comes down to that. Of course, technically speaking, it's also very good. You know, the graphics, the story, the sound. I mean, standards are very high these days, so it's harder to be impressive when it comes to that kind of stuff. But to me, it just comes down to the gameplay, and I think that really explains, really in the end, why those are the top two games. They both probably had the best gameplay.
Right. Brendan, what about you? Why is Horizon Zero Dawn game of the year?
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with anything Alex said, but for me it was just the fact that it was something completely new. To a certain extent, these days you're never going to have a truly original story. Something is going to be borrowed from something else. You know, we've seen themes and storylines repeat 1,000 times at this point, but the setting was really kind of what drew me in, just because you had this, you know, something that looked like it was from 20,000 years ago, but at the same time felt like it was 20,000 years in the future. So I just thought it was a really unique the way they presented the world, and then the story to go with it drew you in. So for me, it gets a little nod over Zelda, because even though Zelda's a very well-done game, what is it, the 45th Zelda game we've had?
Yeah.
I mean, over the last 30 years. I mean, I've been playing Zelda since I was, 8, 9 years old? So,
right.
It's just kind of hard to get excited about another Zelda. Like, people get mad because Star Wars is milking Disney. Okay, well, there's been, what, 9 Disney movies? 10 if you include the Clone Wars? How many Zelda and Mario games is Nintendo going to churn out? So, yeah, you know,
well,
to me, it's less on a knock on Zelda and more of a knock on Nintendo, but just because of that, that's why I put one over the other.
Yeah. And here's really my argument about The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. You're basically making a new Zelda game to go along with a new system that you're releasing. So you're basically rebooting this for a new gaming system. And that's fine. We do this all the time. And I think that you should take two of your staples and make them great for the Switch. Same with Super Mario Odyssey, okay? But Breath of the Wild, to me, you're doing the Elder Scrolls Skyrim for Zelda. You have seen what you can do with a huge open world, side adventures, you know, hundreds of hours of playing and all that. You know, the Dragon's Age Inquisition, which was Game of the Year a few years ago, that's what you're doing with a character that we've known for 30 years. Not that we don't rate sequels as Game of the Year, okay? We did last year. But Horizon Zero Dawn is new, it's fresh, it's something we haven't seen before, it's rich in story and mythology, and it's a game that you can have a long-running series because you've got all of these great characters and also spurn on future generations, okay? But again, we've never played a game like this with such a beautiful and open world. So I think that is what put... If it's based on that concept compared to rebooting, making a sequel for a new game system, even though it's open world and graphics are fantastic and the best of all the other versions of that game, I think it's the fresh game, the new one, something that we've never seen, that should always be number one. And like Alex said, I mean, the gameplay is easy. There's a lot of different ways to make your way through and stuff. But it, also, in the day, since we are all about female heroines now, we are living in that day and age, Aloy is a great protagonist, and you want to know more about her, and you want to see this story continue. So that's also why I think this will end up being a great series. Because, we have not seen... This isn't going to be a one-and-done game. But,
that's my
reasoning for Horizon being number one. And we kind of talked about it all year long. I mean, when we first started playing it back in February, that this, was the leading contender, and that we didn't really think there was anything that was going to... really challenge it. And I was wrong on that. I didn't think Legend of Zelda would be as popular as it was and be as close to Game of the Year. But you have to have that one game that just ekes out more and more. Also, I do want to point out, single-player campaign. Last year, Overwatch was Game of the Year by pretty much everybody except us. But it's strictly an online multiplayer game. And as great as it was, we all, as gamers that have been doing this for over 30 years, we want a good single-player campaign that we can do by ourselves. And if you don't have that,
especially
then I don't
those
think
of
you
us
should
that are, especially those of us
yeah.
over 30.
I don't want to play multiplayer with a bunch of 12-year-olds. I just don't. So... Yeah, but anyway, Horizon Zero Dawn, that's our reasoning. You can read the full review online and also look at our top 10 list, and we'll quickly kind of go through it with you since we're running a little out of time. But I did want to point out that Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is our number 2 game. Don't get us wrong. I mean, we're not knocking it for what it is. It came out at number 2. The number 3 game on our final top 10 list was Wolfenstein 2. The new Colossus, which also happened to be our first-person shooter of the year. First of all, dystopian-type world, alternate reality, and you get to go kill Nazis with superior technology. how is this not a winning formula for a game? So, in this, I do think the sequel was better than the first one. The first one was a lot of fun. And when I say the first one, I'm not talking about the original one. I'm talking about the one they came out with a few years ago, and even the little smaller game that they did, which was a lot of fun. Because you very much have this Man in the High Castle type of feel to it. You know, it's Nazis have taken over America, and, you know, atom bombs are dropped, and you're basically, I love the part where you basically get to New York City through the harbor, and you're having to make your way through, you know, New York as an atom bomb had dropped. And then it takes you to, Roswell and New Orleans. It even takes you to Mesquite, Texas, which is not too far from any of us. Oh, yeah. Now, if there is one complaint I have about this game, I loved every moment, but this is my one complaint. This is a shout-out to a friend of our show, Glenn Morshauer. He voiced BJ's dad, and he was a racist prick in the game. And we love you, Glenn. We do. It's just very hard to buy you as a villain, especially a racist villain that makes your son kill a dog. And all I could say is, hated that part. Hated the homecoming, so to speak. You did a great job. I hope they paid you well. But no. Everything else was fantastic.
When you've met Glenn, it's so hard to see him as a bad guy because he's such a genuinely nice person.
Right.
So.
Yeah, so. Also, real quick, while it did not make our top 10 list, our sports game of the year, Madden 18, squeaked out just ahead of NBA 2K17 for the sole reason of Madden going to the new Frostbite engine. It's also new story mode of the Journey, which they're taking a page from FIFA last year. So you get to have a grunt rise up, go through the draft and all that. And then, of course, the managing, you know, with money and expenses. This is one of the best Madden games that we've had in the last 10 years. Not perfect. The running is still a little clunky, but it's also a very gorgeous game, you know, on high 4K and HD. And the Frostbite engine really made a difference. So, and when you're covering Tom Brady, you better hope you have a really good pass rush because your cornerbacks, as I have discovered, aren't worth shit. It's like you got to get to him before he releases the ball in this game. That's what I have discovered.
I just have a question for Brendan, though, because, you know, there's that whole thing with the Madden curse, and I was wondering if Brendan was scared about that at all when they had Brady on the cover or not.
Well, obviously Brady's immune to everything, so.
I think he's doing pretty good this year. I think they have have a chance.
Yeah, you know, presumptive MVP, but, you know.
Yeah. But, yeah, Madden eked out a little bit. It's been a lot of fun playing this year. For the rest of our top 10 list, we'll go down a little bit quickly here. And we apologize for kind of the rush. We can obviously talk more about games, and I'm sure we will. But anyway, after number 3 with Wolfenstein, number 4 we got to Destiny 2, which Wolfenstein eked out just a little bit compared to Destiny 2 for the shooter of the year. But for Destiny fans, it was a great sequel. Brendan, I think you've played more of Destiny 2 than any of us. So.
Yeah. Look, I get people's complaints about it because there wasn't enough massive changes to the game to where people thought it was really a true sequel. It was more like why wasn't this just a continuation of the first game? Why is this a brand new game?
Right.
And I understand that. But I think the things that did change, even though they were subtle, were welcome changes. I really liked, the changes to the light level system. So and just the changes to some of the combat, some of the minor tweaks. It just made things a little bit more streamlined. But I really enjoyed the public events because they just made grinding up your level a lot faster, especially for a guy who doesn't have a big group of online people to play with. So I was able to get up to the higher light levels quickly because of that. So that was good. But, you know, it's just a good shooter. And I'm not a huge shooter person, but I like it because it's a cooperative shooter rather than a competitive
right.
shooter. Like you said, I don't want to spend my afternoons getting wasted by a 14-year-old. So, and I would, because I suck, I'll be honest. But
right.
I just thought it was a very good game. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I'm still playing it. So.
Okay. Number five was Assassin's Creed Origins, which I rated as the best Assassin's Creed game since the second one. Wide open world, ancient Egypt. It's technically a prequel, but if this is, you know, it's like the Skyrim version of Assassin's Creed, but it was a lot of fun. So I think for Assassin's Creed fans, it's definitely worth playing and definitely worth the money. Number six for us topped out at For Honor, which the three of us did the review on it back in February. And while we did have some complaints, and there was definitely some things they need to improve on, and I think, you know, the patch has helped, it's still a lot of fun as a great, you know, kind of hack and slash and blood and guts game. And definitely has a lot of replay value. I've gone back through it a couple of times and still like to be able to go back to it. So it did end up into our top 10 list, even though it didn't make it into the top 10 list of everybody. Super Mario Odyssey ended up at number 7, for obvious reasons why. It's Super Mario. It was a gorgeous game for the Switch, and I think it needed the Switch to be able to do this game properly. Some of you will probably hate us for this, but Persona 5 did make it into our top 10 list, and it only ended up at number 8. We're not saying it's not a great game. It just didn't make it with enough votes to the top. I know other people are rating it as the best RPG of the year, and that may be very true. But anyway, but it is in there, and it's a fantastic game if you're a fan of that series. Prey also ended up into our top 10 list towards the bottom, which Alex and I did the review on, and I think it definitely has some replay value. It was very stylish, and you liked it a lot, didn't you, Alex?
Yeah, and it was interesting because I didn't really get a chance to go back and replay it as much as I would have liked to later in the year, but, you know, as I was playing some of these other games that were kind of in a similar genre, it kind of made me want to go back and play it, and I think that's a testament to just what a good game it was.
Yeah, and I actually I agree with you on that. I love the retro feel of the space station, and it was kind of a scary game with the mimics and stuff, so definitely one that I'd like to go back and go through. Number 10, what ended up at our number 10 on our final list was Resident Evil 7. Which was one of the better ones of the series, and kind of a terrifying game. I know Alex went back and forth on which was the scarier, Resident Evil 7 or The Evil Within, but I think you kind of settled on Resident Evil 7 being a little bit scarier, and the VR experience is just terrifying. So definitely has some replay value there, and was another interesting game. Our honorable mentions, which had some of our lower votes, Nier Automata and Neo, which were right on top of each other, both great RPG games. Call of Duty World War II, fantastic campaign, went back to its roots. But you can't beat post-apocalyptic alternate reality at the end of the day. I mean, Call of Duty World War II makes you feel like you're in Band of Brothers when you're playing. And it's very good for that series, but just couldn't beat Wolfenstein 2. Uncharted The Lost Legacy, Star Wars Battlefront 2, and it got an honorable mention and was rated a little bit higher because of the single-player campaign, which had a very interesting story to the whole new canon of Star Wars. And, of course, Middle-Earth Shadow of War was there, and PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, the PC version, Mass Effect Andromeda, And of course, Mario Kart 8 ended up as an honorable mention as well with NBA 2K17. So you can argue with all of us about how we rated, and you can see each of our top 10 lists and our gaming article online. I'm sure there will be huge debates, but that is kind of how we put everything as a staff and rated Horizon Zero Dawn. Now, real quick, before we kind of start to close out our show, that didn't make it on our list, but was there one game that you absolutely just kind of a surprise hit for you that you played, Alex?
Well, that's a good question. It's hard for me to say, you know, but I guess in terms of expectations and then how it delivered, and then I guess in terms of how good the replay value was compared to what I thought it would be, I think I would have to go with Resident Evil 7 because they went a different direction with the game in terms of the style, went from third person to first person, which was great for me because I've always preferred first-person style game anyways. But when I went through the game the first time, I thought that the replay value was not going to be that great the second time around. And
At first I thought
that was true. But as time went on and I got back to it again, I realized that the replay value was a lot higher than I expected. And, you know, when I played a game like Evil Within 2, it actually made me want to go back and play Resident Evil 7 some more. Not saying that The Evil Within 2 is not
good.
Well,
I'm gonna cut you off there. I want to ask Brendan real quick. Was there a surprise game for you that you really loved this year?
Torment: Tides of Numenera. It's a the party style RPG top down from back in the late 90s, like Baldur's Gate, Icewind Dale style. And developers have been bringing those back as far as their own projects on Kickstarter. And I thought it was going to be more about nostalgia than it was being a really good game. And it turned out to be a really good game.
All right. Well, my two is Battlefront, which I did absolutely love the story. Definitely will go back and play it again. And I've loved the extended content and how it connected to everything. Very much felt like a Star Wars game. And the multiplayer stuff. Of course, I think they should have packaged it with Battlefront 2, the original one. Because I still think, as crappy of a game as that is, there's still a lot of good stuff there that, you know, survival missions, duels, and the aerial assaults. I really like the aerial assaults in Battlefront 2 and having to incorporate that into the story. So that was my kind of surprise hit because I was prepared to just absolutely hate it and figure they were just going to milk us for more money because it's Star Wars. But the other one, MLB The Show, it keeps improving. You know, it's a grind to play 162 games a year, but between the playoff modes and everything else, it was just beautiful. And I have no doubt that the one coming up this year is going to be great. So, all right, we're going to close the show out a little bit. So a couple of little final things. We have a new category called What You Should Check Out, and it can be anything nerdy. We'll start with Brendan real quick. Just mention one beer that you think everybody should, that all nerds should check out.
Well, if you're in the Dallas area during winter, you got to check out Petacola's Wintervention. It's a perfect winter spiced ale. Really nice winter warmer, comes in at 10%, but it drinks like it's about 5%, so it's dangerous that way. But, yeah, definitely Petacolis Wintervention.
Okay. All right. Alex, is there something nerdy that everybody should check out?
I don't have anything to add at this moment. I just keep digging what you dig.
All right. I do. Kind of on two streaming series that I've discovered over the last few weeks, one on Netflix about toys. It's a four-part series for toy collectors between Star Wars, G.I. Joe, Barbie, and He-Man, and was very fascinating about how everything came together, especially the Star Wars stuff. The other one was a series about the best games per year, starting with 1980 all the way through the 80s. And 10-part series that I absolutely loved. And I love the guy talking about the best babe gaming babes. So anyway, go and check those two series out. As for the Saturday Morning Nerd Show, we'll be back next Saturday at 10 a.m. Getting nerdy with you with our breakfast cereal, our coffee, and other things, because that's what we're all about. Thank you for tuning in. Play more video games, and we'll be back next week. All right.